The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, January 21st, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is our Fox GameSpot's Timur Hussein.
Neither enemy nor friend. I am here for you all. Hello, Blessing.
That is an ominous opening. I always consider us friends. Are you telling me you're not my friend or my enemy? What do I make of you, Timur?
That is a Gray Fox line.
This is why you're the Fox, because like, yeah. There's so many lines in Metal Gear, you could tell me half the lines in that game, I'd be like, is that in that game?
It's not. Neither enemy nor friend, I am back from a place where such names are meaningless.
Man.
But he was a friend. He was a friend.
Yeah, he was a friend.
Fox was a friend in the end.
Yeah, he was, but like, when that was before you knew he was Fox, right? Like, it was before. He was just Ninja. So
he was Deep Throat.
Yeah, he was Deep Throating.
Throat
Can we get some? Can we get some DPs in the chat?
Throw some DPs in the chat. Throw some in there.
Or DTs. Just type Deep Throat. Just start spamming Deep Throat, and then someone take a screenshot of it and then send it to Greg and be like, look
chat.
What's happened. Look
at
what's
Game
happened.
Look what Game of Greggy.
Look what Tomo has done. Just, spam Deep Throat, everyone.
Let's get a chain going, mods. Is this legal? Can we do this? Is this going to get our account in bad standing with Twitch? I feel like...
No, you can say stuff like that all the time.
Yeah, but like, if we chant Deep Throat, I feel like Twitch might see that and go, what's happening over there? Is it illegal stuff?
Someone take a screenshot of this with the chat and then tweet it at Greg Miller. And be like, look what's happened. Hey, Greg.
Oh, God. Tam, how have you been with the big news week?
You know, I woke up that day, that fateful day, I woke up to take a shit. I was like, I need to, like, I got the bubble guts. It was like 5:06 a.m. I was like, I don't know what's going on, so I'm gonna go take a quick shit. Obviously pulled out my phone to look at what was going on, and Activision
on the toilet
being I was walking to the toilet. Activision being purchased by Xbox, Microsoft. I was like, all right, well, I gotta quickly run before I go to the toilet and see if everything this is taken care of. 4 hours later, Blessing, I was like, I need to go to the toilet. I still need to go to the toilet.
Oh no. So that's
I feel
not
like
good
I've
for
been
you.
I've been living that life this week where I'm just trying to do things. I've got a preview, a feature that I need to write, which I've been trying to write for the last 5 days. And I have not written a single word yet. Today is the day.
What game is this?
Don't worry about
Blink
it.
Blink twice if it rhymes with Nolly Nolly. Curled.
It's not on the early world. No.
What is blink three?
Don't worry about it. I can't say it. I'm not saying it.
You're not gonna say it though. You're just gonna blink. Remember?
Yeah, you're not saying it.
It's Elden Ring. No, it's not
Elden Ring.
He's not blinking. His eyes are even wider open than they were before. Blink four times if it rhymes with seafood. Seafood. Gran.
I don't think that's how rhyming works.
Gran Turismo.
I'm just like I'm going through the Rolodex of like, what games are even coming out this spring?
You'll never get it. You'll never get it.
There's like a billion games. Is it Rumbleverse?
In the words of the Persona 4 theme, you'll never see it coming.
Oh, it's Persona 4 Ultimate Evil Arena Max.
Persona 5, sorry. Persona 5. Is it 4 or 5? You'll never see it.
That's 5. That's 5.
That's 5.
It's the original battle song. Yeah.
That's 5. Yeah. I changed it to the Persona 3 battle song, which is absolutely popping. It is the best battle song. Holy shit. Anyways.
Let me tell you, I was talking to Greg about this, because like he thankfully got to host Games Daily that day. And like when I woke up to the news, it was that thing of like waking up a little bit later than I usually wake up because I wasn't hosting Games Daily. But then also doing the thing I do, where the first thing I do is I grab my phone and I open up Twitter because I'm a broken person. And the first thing I saw was the Xbox Activision like logos next to each other. And I saw that and I was like, oh, certainly that's fake. And then I saw that it was coming from the Xbox Twitter account. And I was like, certainly that's a fake Twitter account, even though the verified symbol is right. Like, my brain refused to believe that it happened for like a good, I want to say 30 seconds, until I just scrolled through the explore page and I was like, nah, man, this is real. Like, this is real. Yeah, this is a wild thing.
It's really exciting. Like, it's weird because there's so many nuances and so many angles to talk about it, but yeah. Also it's an exciting thing that's happening. And I know we're going to cover one perspective of it today.
We're going to cover quite a few, actually, because this, of course, is Kind of Funny Games Daily. And today's stories include Xbox wanting Call of Duty on PlayStation, Activision Blizzard employees unionizing, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kind of Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in. And silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, XCast is recording later today, and it's going to be a huge episode as they dive into conversation about what Activision's acquisition means for Xbox. You can tune into that live later today, or listen when it goes up for everyone tomorrow on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. And then there's also a new episode of the Kind of Funny podcast, but you can probably skip that one. Thank you to our Patreon producers, James Davis at James Davis Makes, Blackjack, and Pranksy. Today we're brought to you by HelloFresh, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Before we get into this, I've looked through the run sheet, and it looks like there are zero stories in here from the number one video game website on the internet, GameSpot.com. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. I will just reiterate that GameSpot remains the number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 video game website on the internet.
Here's the thing. Yeah. It's the thing of our number one news story doesn't come from a news source. It comes directly from a Twitter post, right? And so there are chances for me to cite GameSpot that are being directly taken from me because of one man named Phil Spencer who decides to give the news directly to us. Yesterday, later in the day after KFGD, Phil Spencer tweeted out a tweet that stopped the world, you know, set the world on fire, stopped the world. It
had more impact than Kim Kardashian's ass picture. Like,
oh, 1,000%.
Broke the internet. Like, Kim Kardashian wishes her booty had as much power as Phil Spencer's words.
I saw a tweet this morning that quote tweeted this tweet and was like, this must be one of the most expensive tweets ever tweeted, just based on how many lawyers this must have went through in order to actually get this statement out. Yesterday, Phil Spencer tweeted out, quote, had good calls this week with leaders at Sony. I confirmed our intent to honor all existing agreements upon acquisition of Activision Blizzard and our desire to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation. Sony is an important part of our industry and we value our relationship. Tim, this is very carefully worded. There's a lot of ways to understand what he's saying here. What is your takeaway from this tweet?
I think it's been pretty well. I think this is a very well-worded statement that creates. It's interesting because on the one hand, you can bring what you know about Xbox and its leadership to this tweet. Given the strides that they've made, especially Phil Spencer as a figurehead within Xbox, and his ethos of opening up gaming and democratizing access to it, including accessibility, like not being precious over franchises, reaching out across, you know, different bridges to connect with who most people would consider the competition, and, you know, having things like Minecraft still published everywhere, having Xbox owned characters appear in Smash, that kind of stuff. And you could take this at face value and say, sure, I think this is Phil Spencer being genuine in the way that he has proven himself to be. And this, it is what it is. They are going to honor existing agreements and keep Call of Duty on PlayStation. And they believe wholeheartedly that Sony is, you know, an important part of the industry and the relationship is valuable. You could also take the more cynical approach and say, like, it's carefully worded in a way to give them some leeway where they could make some moves that are beneficial to themselves, that if Sony doesn't get on board with, they come out looking good, Sony comes out looking bad, and it is what it is. Like, to my mind, the scenario that I think could play out, I'm not saying will play out, but it could be quite funny, is like, yeah, Call of Duty is a Game Pass exclusive. We are very willing to put Game Pass on PlayStation. And that is how we want to keep Call of Duty on Sony platforms. And if, obviously, Sony's like, oh, hell no, absolutely not, you're not getting any of that on our platform, they go, we did our part, we said it was important, we showed how we could get Sony, we could get Call of Duty on Sony platforms.
Yeah. And Desire, Sony decided Desire not to... is doing a lot of heavy lifting in terms of the wording of this statement. Desire... Our desire to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation.
Exactly. And I think that is a possibility. It's just a matter of how you want to... I think there's enough leeway for it to go either way. My hope is that it is what it is. I think there's a lot of value. And I think Phil Spencer and the Microsoft team are smart enough to know that Call of Duty is a big, big, big bag as a multi-platform product. And I feel like they're smart enough to know. We just... Because Phil also came out and talked about how it wasn't just IP that it wasn't just Call of Duty that was important. It was all the IP that was in the vault. And from my perspective, I would think of it as, all right, we've got all this unused IP. Well, let's use that to bolster Game Pass, and let's not touch Call of Duty. Call of Duty is going to be a massive moneymaker as is. Let's invest in making it a better experience. Keep it multi-platform. That will make us big, big bank. And then we can use the rest of the IPs that Activision's been squandering because they've closed studios down, or they keep making toys for Bob, do weird shit, and or like, you know, they're forcing everyone to be on Call of Duty. Let's use those IP. Let's give those to different teams and reinvest in them and use that to be the big push for kind of, you know, bolstering what Game Pass is. Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about IP like Tony Hawk and Guitar Hero and Crash and Spyro. There's a lot of stuff in there. And that's just like at the top level, let alone when you go deeper into all of what Activision has in terms of IP, which are more niche, right? Phil Spencer mentioned King's Quest the other day, which was the last thing on my mind, but I was like, sure, yeah, King's Quest, throw it out there. There's a lot you can dig into in terms of what you can do with the IP and how you can spread it around, and there's a large conversation we can have about that. But to bring it back to this, right, I want to pull a question from Grezik, who wrote into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, hey, Bless and Tam, so Phil Spencer made a new statement regarding the future of Call of Duty. There are a lot of ways to dissect what he said, but to me, it feels like Phil is saying Xbox would be open to keeping Call of Duty on PlayStation if Sony made it worth their while. This also feels like a more definitive statement compared to anything that was said during the Bethesda acquisition. Do you agree, or am I reading too much into this? What kind of deal could Microsoft and Sony make to do this? Could this lead to a version of Game Pass, one with only Xbox first party titles, on PlayStation? Thanks for all you do, Grezik. I want to take that, and I want to pivot over to a tweet. There's a lot of Twitter takes about this, as is natural, right? There's one that I saw from Tom Warren on Twitter that I agree with, right? And it kind of goes back to there are a lot of ways you can take this, right? He tweeted yesterday, there are a variety of ways you could read this tweet. Call of Duty, then he bullet points this out, right? First bullet point is Call of Duty will remain on PlayStation forever. Second bullet point, existing Call of Duty titles will remain on PlayStation. Third bullet point, Call of Duty will remain until contractual contracts end. Microsoft used clever language during its Bethesda acquisition too. And that is the thing here, where there's a lot of parallels between the Bethesda acquisition and this acquisition. I remember a year ago having a PSLW episode that was diving into I forget exactly the tweet Phil Spencer made, but it was a very similar tweet of like him trying his best to communicate to us how this is going to work, trying his best to tell us that Bethesda games are going to be exclusive, but him not being able to say that directly because they don't necessarily want to say you can't get this on PlayStation, because I'm sure ideally they would want these games on PlayStation. It's all about getting that deal to work between the two of them. This strikes me as very similar to that, but in a way that isn't one for one, right? Because Call of Duty is not Skyrim. Call of Duty is not, but like Activision is not Bethesda. Call of Duty, we were having this conversation a couple days ago on the show as we went through the NPD reports about the top games that sold last year. Call of Duty was the number one and number two best-selling game last year between Call of Duty Vanguard and Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. And I mentioned this on Tuesday during the actual big conversation when the news first broke, right? You don't spend $68 billion and then say goodbye to Call of Duty money. You don't spend that much money and say, now start making less money. Part of the reason why Call of Duty makes so much money is because they release on all platforms and because it's because the yearly releases and all these things, right? I do think some of those things are going to change because some of those things are for the better. And we're going to get into it with the next article about why Call of Duty will probably be better as a non-yearly installment. But we'll get into that in a sec. Call of Duty is not only super profitable for Activision, it's also profitable for PlayStation in terms of the percentage of money that PlayStation makes on sales of Call of Duty on that platform. PlayStation badly probably wants Call of Duty to stay on that platform and is probably willing to do what they need to do in order to make that happen. And I'm sure they're having conversations. The question is, how does that pan out? I don't think, and this might come back to bite me in the ass in the future if I'm proven wrong, and I'm fine with that. I don't think Call of Duty, the big titles, are going to not be on PlayStation in the future. I do think that maybe Game Pass has to come to PlayStation, or maybe there has to be some kind of deal in order to make it work. But it's hard for me to believe that Microsoft would say no to the amount of money they would make on Call of Duty sales on PlayStation, and that PlayStation would also be okay with saying goodbye to the amount of Call of Duty sales that they get on the platform.
I think that there is the interesting kind of thought experiment comes when you think about what Call of Duty is right now, because there's two kinds of Call of Duty experiences, and I think that what we think of Call of Duty is not as popular as what Call of Duty currently is. So you have Call of Duty, the traditional experience, which is the blockbuster title, which has a 4-hour, 5-hour campaign and some multiplayer portion. That's what we're all talking about, right? But the Call of Duty that is popular right now is Warzone. Like, there is a scenario where Microsoft says, hey, yeah, Warzone's everywhere. If you want a single-player Call of Duty experience with that classic deathmatch or like team deathmatch stuff, you got to come to Xbox. And that's the way it's going to be. Like, I think that's a way, and within that plan, within this tweet wording, still works. Like, that's true to the tweet wording. I wouldn't be surprised if like Spencer and team and Xbox are like, yeah, Warzone is what will be everywhere. But the kind of curated kind of like narrative driven multiplayer experience and single player experience, the zombies, that kind of stuff, you got to come to Game Pass if you want that stuff. And I think that you can still make a hell of a lot of money from Warzone alone, which is available everywhere, especially some multi-platform, while also it's like having your cake and eating it too, with this approach, I feel like. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens.
Yeah, that's the tough thing about this is that there are so many, we are doing the Doctor Strange thing of, there are so many ways that this can go. I'm right there with you that I could see the potential of, hey, Warzone exists and we're going to continue to support Warzone as much as possible on every single platform.
I desperately need a Photoshop of Phil Spencer looking into camera and going like this.
Get somebody, I don't know if we have anybody talented enough to do this. I would love a GIF of me doing it, because I make that reference a lot of the Doctor Strange looking to all the different, if I can do this.
I don't think that's how it works.
I don't fucking know yet, but somebody put that together. Like,
that looks
like a Strange Effect.
You're nailing it. That's 100% it. Yep. Nobody insert anything else there. Right? Yeah. Nobody do anything else.
Do not, if you do, I know you have
put that out of context.
I know you lot have been watching a hell of a lot of Pino because we have been in quarantine. Do not create any crossovers.
Don't you insert it.
God damn it. I didn't even think about that. I didn't think about how you could do it that way. Jesus Christ. But yeah, back to the conversation, right? Like, looking at all the different possibilities. I could see that happening. I could see it be a thing of Warzone exists on all platforms, and we're going to push Warzone as the multi-platform Call of Duty, and we're going to push the Modern Warfare's and the Black Ops and the main Call of Duty games on Game Pass, but also to the point of having your cake and eating it too. I could easily see the case of Microsoft going, hey, yeah, on Xbox, on our platforms, Call of Duty is on Game Pass, and that bolsters up those subscriptions, and that makes that platform viable, and we are still putting out $70 Call of Duties on PlayStation, because that is also going to make us a lot of money. I do think there's a Call of Duty is on a different level in terms of the amount of money that is that flows because of that franchise, and the amount of money that you can make off of having it everywhere, because it's Call of Duty. It's a game that every single year is the number one and sometimes number two best-selling game of the year. To continue the Call of Duty conversation, though, I want to bring in story number two, talking about what Call of Duty could mean for yearly releases. This is Kat Bailey at IGN, who writes an article titled, Call of Duty Could Move Away from Annual Releases, According to a New Report. In the wake of Microsoft's blockbuster acquisition of Activision Blizzard, some Call of Duty devs are reportedly eager to move away from the annualized release schedule that has defined the series for much of its existence. In a new article that provides an overview of Activision Blizzard's internal reactions to the acquisition, Bloomberg reports that, quote, high-level employees, end quote, have discussed ditching Call of Duty's current release schedule. Currently, Activision continues to put out a new Call of Duty every year from a rotating series of studios, a strategy that has proven an awkward fit since the release of Warzone. These developers are said to feel that slowing the franchise's release cadence would please players who have grown weary of Call of Duty's steady drumbeat of releases. Bloomberg's article cites Call of Duty Vanguard's 36% sales decline in the UK, though it still managed to top 2021's sales charts. According to Bloomberg, the shift may not happen until next year or later, with this year's release, quote, expected to redeem the franchise's fortunes, end quote, which is a very fascinating thing. I wonder what that means, right? Like, what the fuck? But also, like, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of, like, Call of Duty releasing yearly, what Warzone means for the franchise. I'm right there with the article in terms of having a yearly Call of Duty alongside Warzone feels excessive in a way where I'm sure there's a better way to do this, where you can still make the same amount of money that you're making off Call of Duty.
Yeah, the problem with Call of Duty currently that I have is, firstly, like, redeeming the franchise's fortunes, like, that is a phrase that in some form or another comes up every year. It's part of the Call of Duty cycle at this point, where every new Call of Duty is the one that is going to restore Call of Duty to its former glory, which is like, what are you trying to do here? It's still massive. I think for me, the biggest problem with Call of Duty is Call of Duty has become background noise. Like, it's just, like, no one really pays attention. There was a period where everyone, when Call of Duty was announced, the entire focus of the industry was on Call of Duty. You know, post-Modern Warfare, Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops, Black Ops 2, even World at War. Since then, Call of Duty has just become background noise, and the static that's drowning it out is Call of Duty. Like, it itself is drowning itself out. Which is wild. Like, there's so much going on between Warzone and yearly releases and who is working on it that you cannot blame people for just being disengaging from it entirely, especially when it's not, like, blowing people away. It's not doing new and innovative stuff. It's just kind of ticking along, and I feel like it's become an uphill struggle for Call of Duty to convince Call of Duty that it's fans that it's good these days. Like, we have, you know, story trailers and character trailers, and with increasing, like, difficulty, it's becoming harder. For me, anecdotally at least, like, every news Call of Duty, where they're like, this one's all about story, I'm like, you said pay attention, meathead, you're saying the same shit that he said, like, for the last one. Like, it doesn't, you're doing the same thing again and again. I think that moving to a non-annual release is a smart idea. Like, give these developers the time to come up with something that's genuinely interesting and will push through the noise. You have Warzone can be your thing that is the drip feed of Call of Duty to keep it front and center of people's minds and kind of like their gaming lifestyles. But give people the opportunity to kind of like shock people back with Call of Duty. I think that needs to happen. And now that Activision is kind of like under the Microsoft and Xbox umbrella, I feel like they're going to be in a better position. Or Microsoft will, I hope, will look at these individual teams and be like, hey, take a little more time and do something your own. There was a time when, remember when Call of Duties felt distinct depending on who was making it? Like, an Infinity Ward Call of Duty would feel different from a Treyarch Call of Duty. Dude, would feel, like, different from a Sledgehammer.
I was always a Black Ops person. Like, that was my big memory of during the PS3 generation, playing Modern Warfare at a friend's house and, like, not immediately vibing with it. And then, like, Black Ops 1 came out and being like, oh shit, this is my, and then playing Black Ops 2 and being like, oh man, like this is the shit, like playing on that ship level.
Now it's like that, I can't tell you the differences between them. Like they all feel the same. There's like stylistic, even like the aesthetic and stylistic stuff, it's all come so close together that I don't know the difference between one Call of Duty and another on is based on a screenshot or a short video clip. There was a time where I could tell you exactly who was making the Call of Duty and what it was based on just like a couple of pixels of it or like a corner of a screenshot. These days, it's like, it's all the same. And I think that's a big, big problem. It is white noise, it's static. Call of Duty is its own biggest problem currently. And I feel like stepping away from the annual release, giving people breathing room and encouraging some individuality and distinction while allowing Warzone to kind of carry the franchise on a day-to-day basis is the right thing to do. And it also give these poor developers a break and like recharge them creatively, because you have to believe that they are sick and tired of making the same shit every year. I mean, they're doing their best, and God love them. They are, like, some of the games are fantastic, and within them, there's ideas and moments that are spectacular. But by and large, Call of Duty, one of the biggest franchises in the world, is almost entirely forgettable at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what makes it feel samey is the fact that there's just been such an oversaturation. You know, we've had 5 Black Ops games, right? You had 1-4 and then Black Ops Cold War.
Yeah.
We've had so many Modern Warfares that they've rebooted Modern Warfare. And even as I read the part where they said this year's release is expected to redeem the franchise's fortunes, the first thing I thought of was, all right, so is it going to be Modern Warfare 2? Is it going to be Infinity War doing that again? Like, it
almost certainly.
Yeah,
almost certainly.
I think there's just been so many Call of Duties that, especially for the sect of the gaming audience that goes beyond Call of Duty and plays so many different games, you get back to Call of Duty and it's like, didn't I just play this? Like, I think you just have that ever ongoing cycle, and that is exacerbated heavily by Warzone being a thing. I think taking the your foot off the gas a little bit and leaning off of yearly and going maybe every 2 years but between devs, I think that would do a lot for the freshness of it and the anticipation of the next Call of Duty. Man, it's been 2 years, let's see what Infinity Ward has been working on for 4 years at this point, let's see what Treyarch has been working on for however long, right? Let's see what even if you took one of them off, right, if you're gonna go every 2 years, because a 6-year development cycle would be way too long probably, you can then give Raven something else, right? Raven could make another first person shooter if they wanted to. Maybe they could lean into something more campaign focused, or maybe they can start up what could be the next Call of Duty style thing, where it's like, cool, we're making our own Titanfall, essentially, right? We're making our own big first person shooter that is going to stand alongside Call of Duty, and we can have that back and forth there. I think there's a lot you can do with that would add a lot of vibrancy to your catalog. And, you know, being a part of Xbox, you don't have to lean into Call of Duty as much as like overall Microsoft, because now you have Call of Duty, you have Halo, and you have Overwatch, right? And like, that is just the big first person multiplayer shooters.
Got Wolfenstein as well,
yeah, let alone the single player stuff, Wolfenstein, Doom, right? You have Gears if you want to bring in third person into it. You have so much to work with in terms of these big action shooter games that you don't have to churn things out, essentially. That doesn't have to be the option.
Relax
a thing,
I know you're gonna transition to the next story, but I just want to address something important that was mentioned in chat.
Go for it,
Ryan.
Is it about the GIF? Did somebody GIF me out already? I've been refreshing Corey Cudney's.
I've not seen any GIFs. I think someone did threaten to make a video, which is good. I've also not seen anyone tweeting Deep Throat at Greg, which is deeply disappointing to me. I just wanted to let Ryan know that it's absolutely fine. You can dip your chips into ketchup. Live your best life, Ryan.
Wait. Somebody named Ryan in chat is dipping their chips into ketchup?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's fine. I think it's good. Do it, mate.
Control F, Ryan.
Is blessings on the hunt now. Dip it.
Is it Ryan7SR?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna highlight your name.
Ryan. He's gonna ban him.
Timeout.
Oh no,
Ryan.
I'm sorry, Ryan. I snitched on you.
There we go. 600 seconds. Say goodbye to 10 minutes, Ryan. If you ever fucking dare tell me that you dip your chips in the ketchup, that's disgusting.
Ryan, do me a favor. Do me a favor.
Like he's talking about like American. He's talking about potato chips.
Talking about potato chips. Yeah, I think he's talking about chips. Ryan, let me teach you how to retaliate. Okay. Let me teach you my ways. You take pictures of those chips being dipped into ketchup and you tweet them at Blessing. Just keep tweeting them.
Oh, please don't.
Constantly.
Plus, do you dip your French fries in ketchup?
No, French fries I do. French fries I do. We're talking about potato chips, like Lay's potato chips.
Yeah.
Ah. That's weird.
I think you can do it. I think you can do it. I think you can do it and you should do it.
No.
That's what I'm saying.
No.
Okay? Wait, do you do this, Tam?
No, I don't. It's absolutely disgusting.
It's the worst thing I've ever fucking heard. Yeah.
Growing up, I had I say this like he's still not my cousin, but I have a cousin, right?
I know how that is. Like, your next door neighbor is your cousin.
But I have a cousin that grew up and lived in Canada, and he came to visit one time in Illinois, and we were eating breakfast. It was like, I think we were eating eggs and waffles or something, and he put ketchup on his eggs and waffles. And I've never been so disgusted.
You can put it on the ketchup.
Fine. Yeah.
That's fine.
I have a request.
Ketchup on the eggs?
I mean, I'm sorry. You can put, on the eggs. On the eggs is what I meant to say.
No, I don't like it.
If whoever is, I think it was Clawmaster or something like that was threatening to make the video of, take that clip of Blessing doing weird things with his face and just have chips with ketchup falling onto his head.
Oh, no, that's disgusting. We're going to move on because I don't want anybody to get any more ideas. Story number three. Did somebody just leave the call? Oh, is it Mike?
It's Mike.
That was it. That was the line.
He was like, I'm done with this. I can't do
this.
Yeah,
he's like, I can't handle this.
I love Mike because he just hangs out in the call and like doesn't say anything, but like he's in here because he wants to listen to the show.
Mike is paying for a separate tier on Patreon where he gets access to live podcasts 24 hours a day.
Yeah. Like, you can turn on the Twitch and listen. He's like, no, I'm just gonna enter the Discord call. I want it firsthand. I want it raw without the assets around us.
He better not be supporting us on Patreon. You know what I mean?
Patreon. I love it.
I don't want to call anybody out. But Gary Whitta the other day, when we played Ludo.
I don't want to call anybody out. Let's call out Gary Whitta.
I don't want to call anybody out. But Gary, the Rogue One Whitta, who wrote After Earth, when we played Ludo in the in the post show the other day, you know, like we put it up. And then Gary was like, oh, did you guys end up playing Ludo? And I was like, oh, we ran out of time, so we had to do it during the post show. And Gary, let me tell me why. Gary then messaged me and asked me, oh, how do I listen to the post show?
Oh.
And I'm like, Gary, you're on the show. We have a Patreon. And I'm sure he was like, let me give the link to the post show is what he wants. Yeah, which he's, you know, of course.
The thing is, he's going to tweet about it and we're going to get more, you know, exposure.
For the record, I am a Patreon supporter.
You don't got to do that.
I support on Patreon. I get that shit ad free. You know what I'm saying?
I'm also a Patreon supporter because I supported for like $1 back in 2015. And I've just never
that's fine. Yeah, the dollar's fine.
Because the dollar used to get you like a whole Game Over Greggy show. And now what does it get you? Absolutely nothing, right?
I think it's your post show, right?
Tweet at Game Over Greggy. Do you get the post show for $1?
I have no idea. I have no clue. They say it every time we record anything, and I've never heard it once.
Yeah, chat saying you got no. Chat, tweet at Tim Gettys. Where is the, what's the, give us the dollar reward.
You actually just ruined Tim's day. Just so you know.
I'm feeling good today. I feel like
ruined Tim's day. The funny thing is, like, I still listen to the episode with ads for some reason. I don't know why I do that.
For support, and we appreciate it.
We all do.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with me.
Let's hop into the next news story before I get fired. Story number three, Raven Software QA workers unionized within Activision Blizzard. This is Nicole Carpenter at Polygon. Quality assurance workers at Raven Software, a subsidiary of Activision Blizzard, are unionizing with the Communication Workers of America, aka the CWA. The group called Game Workers Alliance is the first group of workers to form a unit under Activision Blizzard. Workers are asking the company to voluntarily recognize the union, which has the support of the supermajority of Raven Software QA workers, 78% of the eligible workers, a CWA representative told Polygon. The unit is made up of 34 members. Some Raven Software QA workers have been on strike since early December after Activision Blizzard denied new contracts for 12 members of the QA team. The strike of several dozen workers, according to the Washington Post, has no end date, and management has not yet responded to workers' demands. Quote, today, I am proud to join with a supermajority of my fellow workers to build our union, Game Workers Alliance, Raven Software QA tester Becca Egner said in a news release. She continues, in the video game industry, specifically Raven QA, people are passionate about their jobs and the content they are creating. We want to make sure that the passion from these workers is accurately reflected in our workplace and the content we make. Our union is how our collective voices can be heard by leadership, end quote. According to the CWA, Activision Blizzard has not cooperated with worker organizers. Instead, it's, quote, used surveillance and intimidation tactics, including hiring notorious union busters to silence workers, end quote. Mm. Quote, we ask that Activision Blizzard management respect Raven QA workers by voluntarily recognizing CWA's representation without hesitation, Communications Workers of America Secretary Treasurer Sarah Steffens said in a statement. She finishes, quote, a collective bargaining agreement will give Raven QA employees a voice at work, improving the games they produce and making the company stronger. Voluntary recognition is the rational way forward, end quote. Tam, this is good news.
Very good news. I'm extremely pro-union. I belonged to a union at one point when I was working outside the games industry. I was working for London's underground system, and the union was incredibly important to ensuring that we as workers had a fair say in what was happening to us. And in this scenario, you know, it is super, super important. The thing that you need to, I think a lot of effort, the thing that you need to recognize is a lot of time and effort goes into tearing down the idea of unions, union busting, and presenting unions as something evil that are going to ruin your situation. And what they tend to do is distract you from the fact that you have little to no power as is. Chances are, if you're somewhere like Amazon, for example, your working conditions suck. And all that happens when these kind of like smear campaigns go around unions is, oh, you can have this now to if you don't support this union thing, or this union is going to upset the delicate balance of our workplace. When actually the delicate balance of the workplace is you're getting screwed, you are being taken advantage of, and you don't really have a lot of power or say. I think having people, the people who make the things that you love, and the people who put in the hard work to do that and sacrifice their time, their health, their family lives, their personal lives, their own interests, and exploring those so that they can create art for you, having those people have some more power in the things that they can do and say and negotiate for is incredibly important. And what you'll find is, in these scenarios, within the gaming industry, for a lot of developers, conditions are not great. What they're asking for is the bare minimum, like just the bare minimum. Small things, you know, they're not asking for 50% revenue share in Call of Duty. They're just asking for simple, simple quality of life improvements. The ability to, you know, speak for themselves, whether that's through, you know, where, how much time they get to take off, or, you know, how long they work, how much crunch they go through. These are things that they're doing that you would consider good humans would offer other humans as people working together, that a lot of corporations don't do. Corporations, bottom line is all that matters. The suits up top are just going to grind everyone creating into the ground. The fact that there's now a union that has, you know, built itself, come to existence in Raven Software, especially within QA, which QA, some of the hardest working people in development and probably the least appreciated and recognized, and they get put through the ringer and often are forgotten in a lot of big discussions. The fact that they're doing this is incredibly important. I would implore everyone who's watching this, reading this and these stories to support them. And I would implore, I hope that it really, really, like, it becomes a strong union. And if you're out there in game development and you're thinking about doing the same, you absolutely should. 100%. Take this as the start of a much bigger movement. We've had smaller unions in different parts of the industry. Like, I want to see unions everywhere. That is what I'm about. Like, because let me tell you, the people in power, the people with the money, they're not going to do things to help you out of the goodness of their heart. They don't give a shit. Like, never trust a corporation, even if you love that corporation to death. Yep. It doesn't matter what it is, the corporation will never look out for you. That is how you need to approach this. Unions are you and your peers, the people who are grafting with you day after day, taking the power into your own hands to give yourself a better future. And you should support that, especially if you like games, especially if you love games. You need to support that.
Yep. Especially if you love games and you care about the people that make your games, 100%. Yeah. You absolutely nailed it, Tam. And I do hope that this causes ripple effects, not just within Activision, but within the industry as a whole. I think this is a really great starting place. And it being Raven Software, again, is important because that is in Activision, right? And that hopefully you hope and you cross your fingers that this spreads and that you see way more of this. Tam, of course, people can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where they can get this show ad-free. Maybe one day get a $1 tier over on that service. Let me tell you, If you want the show ad-free, go over there. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. Sticking to your New Year's resolutions can be hard, but if you're focusing on saving money by ordering less takeout, learning to cook, or prioritizing your wellness, smashing your goals is a piece of cake with HelloFresh. HelloFresh has endless options to make cooking at home simple and enjoyable by delivering pre-portioned ingredients to your door, including farm-fresh produce that arrives within a week. HelloFresh has 50 menu and market items to choose from every single week, including some more family-friendly or gourmet choices. Kevin Coelho, Paula Coelho, they've been loving HelloFresh. They, of course, Paula, being a vegetarian, like the options of having the vegetarian stuff, and they've been having some fantastic meals over there in their Coelho household. Go to HelloFresh.com/kindoffunny16 and use code kindoffunny16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. That's HelloFresh.com/kindoffunny16 and use code kindoffunny16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts.
Next news story, Tam. This is speaking of the culture over there at Activision Blizzard. Story number 4, Blizzard head promises to improve culture after challenging 2021. This is Jared Moore at IGN. Blizzard boss Mike Ybarra has promised to improve the culture at the studio and detailed a number of measures that the company is actively taking following a challenging 2021. Ybarra publicly shared details of the positive changes that the company is said to be taking in a blog post on Blizzard's website as it looks to rebuild relationships with employees and fans across the world. In the short term, says Ybarra, Blizzard's executive and management teams will be measured directly against culture improvement, which means that their compensation will, quote, directly depend on our overall success in creating a safe, inclusive, and creative work environment at Blizzard, end quote. In addition to enforcing new management changes that directly benefit the studio, Ybarra also says that the company will be dedicating more full-time roles and resources to improving its culture. A few of those leadership positions at the company, says Ybarra, include, quote, a culture leader who will help us maintain the best aspects of what we have today and change and evolve where needed to ensure everyone brings their best self to Blizzard. A new organizational leader for human resources who will build trust, empower our teams, and help foster a safe, positive work environment for everyone. And then a diversity, equity, and inclusion leader solely focused on our progress across multiple efforts in this area, end quote. In order to ensure that positive changes continue at every level of the company, Ybarra says that Blizzard has tripled the size of its compliance and investigation teams and has articulated clear accountability for unacceptable behavior, which applies to all staff at the studio, including leadership and management. Ybarra also went on to state that the company has shared representation data internally, set goals around improving those metrics, and put in place an upward feedback program so that employees can confidently evaluate management. Tam, more good news.
Yeah, this is good news. Again, the one thing I'll say about these kind of stories is they tend to make people disengage from the subject quite quickly. That's the one thing I'm very wary of when it comes to good news like this. You read, like we all know, the kind of decline of Blizzard is one of the biggest stories of the last couple of years, and also kind of one of the saddest stories. Not saddest, but like Blizzard was always known to be this like really cool place to work for a lot of people. Like people aspired to work at Blizzard because they produced good content, and also because as far as we could tell, the culture was really good. Like people, they thrived in there, and they came in and, you know, they were encouraged to, you know, be good to each other and be, you know, a team, a family together. And over the last few years, seems like that is very much not the case. And that has been happening with a lot of studios. And the thing about these kind of stories where it's like, hey, we're doing this thing, we're doing this thing, this thing, this thing. Great. Awesome. That's cool. Happy to see that happening. What tends to happen is people are like, cool. And then they'll move on. And then that's the last we'll hear about it. The important thing, I think, is to keep an eye on this stuff and make sure that we are holding people like Mike Ybarra and other Blizzard executives accountable and make sure that they're showing us progress and keep an eye on, you know, developers are more accessible than ever these days. You can find them on Twitter, you can find them on other social networks, and I'm sure you're probably following a lot of them, but you can get a good idea of kind of like whether a change is actually happening based on, you know, what the comings and goings of developers at the studio and what they're saying. I think it's important for us as an industry to keep an eye on this kind of stuff and make sure that the corporate line isn't the beginning and end of it. if you get what I mean. Like, we got to make sure that we are pressing on, pushing on these executives to show us that the change is being made frequently. Otherwise, the next time you hear about this is the next drama where, you know, someone comes out and says, yo, it sucks at Blizzard still. And then we're going to be like, oh, what happened? It was supposed to change.
Yeah.
You know, they said it was going to change, but we didn't follow up on it to show them we're going to keep the, you know, foot to the fire. And it's on us as the press as well to keep doing that. And I think press is getting better at reporting this stuff. And as much as I'm asking folks in the wider gaming industry, I'm telling myself and my peers in journalism and the press to stay on their ass, man. Like, let's just keep making sure that they're being true to what they're saying.
Yeah, 1000%. I think the thing here is that, yeah, this is not the end of the story, right? The story goes on, and it is about the continually pushing toward good culture and following up and making sure that, hey, this isn't just lip service. This is a thing that is actually happening, and this is a thing that you can show the receipts for. I think it was talked about yesterday, maybe the people brought up Insomniac and how, like, when they released Ratchet last year, about how people were vocal in saying that, hey, we did this with a good working environment, right? We did this without heavy crunch. We did this without the type of culture you see at a Riot or an Activision Blizzard or at Ubisoft, these other companies that keep appearing in the news for bad reasons, right? Because the cultures there aren't supporting the workers. I want to see follow up. I want to see them be vocal. I want to see them be transparent about this stuff. And I think now with this big acquisition, this is probably the biggest opportunity that they have for change, because things are changing across the board. Yeah. There, I do hope they change sooner than later, because of course this is gonna be a long process for the acquisition fully go through, and even after the acquisition, there's still gonna be an uphill battle to actually get things to change and move there. But I do hope that Mike Ybarra and the team there really push for this sooner than later, because
not to take away from the actual the intention here is I'm super happy that Mike Ybarra and the team are acknowledging that this is an issue that needs to be tackled, and they are saying that that they are going to do it. So there's, you know, credit where credit is due. It's good that you're doing that, but we will hopefully be keeping an eye on you, and if you're not, like, you know, proving yourself to be honoring your words, then it's on us to make sure that we expose that and, you know, again, hold their feet to the fire for it.
TM, let's talk about more good news with story number 5. The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask is coming to Nintendo Switch Online next month. This is Jared Moore at IGN. Nintendo has announced that The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask will be the next game to feature as part of Nintendo Switch's online expansion pass service. The game is set to launch in February, but a specific release date has not yet been given. Their announcement reads, quote, "Save Termina before it's met with a terrible fate." The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask comes to Nintendo Switch for Nintendo Switch Online plus expansion pack members in February, end quote. I'm hyped for this. I like that it seems like the cadence is monthly for them dropping a new game on Nintendo Switch Online for N64. Of course, like, I wish it could be faster, but even still, like, I'm hyped for that. Banjo-Kazooie just came out, and, like, I haven't touched that yet, but, like, I'm excited to check that one out as well. And Majora's Mask is one that I know for many people is, like, a fan favorite. I don't know if I can call it a cult classic because it's Zelda, but, like, in comparison to Ocarina and the big ones, it is kind of a cult classic.
What I was going to say is time loop games are still here, baby. It's a shame. Like, I know this is like looking gift horse in the mouth, but it's a shame it's the N64 version and not the 3DS version, because that 3DS version was way better. But I am glad that Majora's Mask is coming out. It's one of the most interesting games in the Zelda catalog, I think. I don't know if any other games really took like a swing like they did here with this game. They've definitely had like very off the beaten path type games, like, you know, Spirit Tracks was very weird, and to a degree Wind Waker was very different as well, but I think Majora's Mask still stands out as one of the most unique experiences within the Zelda franchise, and I think there's probably quite a lot of people that haven't played it, especially in today's day and age. It's worth, if you have the subscription, it's 100% worth checking it out. And like, it is, I think what you'll find is Majora's Mask is influential on the rest of the franchise in ways that are less in subtle ways. Ocarina is like, you play Ocarina and you're like, yeah, I can draw a line from this to other Zeldas in how it was influential, whereas Majora's Mask is the subtle stuff, the nuances, and there's some characterization stuff and also like smaller mechanics that are influential on the rest of the franchise. And I think that's part of the fun of playing Majora's Mask, where you're like, oh, this is how they built on this later, but it just doesn't get as much attention as Ocarina or as something else in the franchise.
Yeah, Majora's Mask always interested me. I never played all the way through it. It was the one where I had finished Ocarina, and I had played Ocarina late. I played Ocarina on like a Project 64 emulator, like way after the fact, with like a keyboard specifically. I played it that way, and I fucking loved it when I played it. And I immediately hopped into Majora's Mask, and it was a thing of like, I forget exactly. I think it was I started it in Twilight Princess at the same time, and Twilight Princess took precedent. And so I was like, you know, I'll just play Twilight Princess. I'll come back to Majora's Mask later. I never went back to it, even though I probably played the first 5 hours of it. Not even that, maybe like the first 3 hours of it. But it's one that I know if I took the time to play Majora's Mask, I'd probably absolutely love it, because it has like the dark energy, the dark tone to it. The fucking moon just slowly, fucking fucked up looking moon, slowly coming down to Earth to destroy everything. I just love that visually, and I just love that conceptually. But then also the time loop mechanic stuff always fascinated me from a game design standpoint. I always think that's a really fun thing to kind of play around with in terms of, cool, like you can kind of track people's routines. You have to solve quests based on like, where's this person at on day one versus day two. That stuff always fascinated me, but I never took the time to get into it. And so with it coming to Nintendo Switch Online, I kind of want to do it, but also part of me is holding out hope that like we might get another remaster or something in the way that we got whatchamacallit, the one that came out last year, Skyward Sword. The way that we got that remaster, what if we got like a remaster for the Switch that was based off of the 3DS version? Like, I know that's a far, like,
yeah,
you know, that's far-fetched, and I should probably give up that hope, but like in the back of my mind, I'm like, just wait on it, right? It's not impossible.
Yeah, I think you would really like it. Like, Majora's Mask got a lot of unique things. It's got the biggest sad boy energy of all the Zelda games, and also like,
I love the sad boy energy games,
man. Dude, it's
so Near Replicant over the winter break.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a huge sad boy energy. It's also like vaguely, like it's like basically like a horror game for a lot of it, because of that some characters, you're like, this is the most tragic game I've played in. This character is like devastatingly tragic, and I think you'll really like it. And like, cut to the end of the year where you're going to be doing a blessing show, and it's like, the best game of 2022 is Majora's Mask something. Yeah, yeah, that'll be you, 100%. But yeah, I think like, now's the time to play it. Like, who knows? We can't, especially when it comes to Nintendo, we can't bet on them doing anything that makes sense, like remastering Majora's Mask or putting the 3DS version out. So just play it while
like,
you can.
They remastered Skyward Sword, and it's like, why? That's work that you have to put into doing that, because you got to figure out how to make that work on Switch. You got to like, they made it so that you can play it handheld. Like, if they did Skyward Sword, just do Majora's Mask, man, because people like Majora's Mask more than Skyward Sword. At least that's what the internet
is. This is what is going to happen. Everyone's going to be like, remaster Majora's Mask, remaster Majora's Mask. Nintendo will put out a statement saying, we are listening to what fans have wanted, and then they'll tease a Zelda remaster, and everyone's going to be like, hell yeah, we did it. And then you will get Link's Crossbow Training remastered, and we'll be like, what the fuck? Like, what happened? Why did you do this?
Do you have any hopes for Nintendo Switch Online for what else they can drop for N64 releases? You know, we got Banjo this month. We're getting Majora's Mask next month. And these are games that have already been announced, because they did that initial, like, oh, here are the games that are coming down the line. And so we know what we might get. But is there anything that you feel like is missing from the N64 pack that you really want to get on the platform?
Shadow Man. Shadow Man? I think that was that on N64? I think that was on N64. I'm pretty sure. It might have been Dreamcast. I might be confusing it.
Kevin, can you look up Shadow Man? I don't think I've heard of Shadow Man.
I'm pretty sure I played Shadow Man on N64. I'm
looking at box
played.
Art right now. Acclaim.
Yeah, let's go. N64. He's got him holding a skull, and he looks like Malnourished Vin Diesel.
I was going to say Diddy Kong Racing. This man brought up Shadow Man. All right. Yeah, this is the box art right here that Kevin's pulled up. Yeah, this looks like an N64 game right
here. Yeah, it's an N64. What was the WWE game on N64 that was?
No Mercy.
No Mercy, maybe? Yeah. Wasn't there one called Warzone as well or something like that? That was good. Pokemon Stadium, is that out yet?
No, it's not. Dude, I would go crazy for Pokemon Stadium. Like,
give us Pokemon Stadium. Yeah. Let's do some Pokemon Stadium. That would be pretty cool.
Go above and beyond with it. They would never do this, especially with Switch Online. But like,
make Castlevania 64. Modern. Let's go.
Oh, Castlevania! Did people like that one?
No, it's insanely broken. It was awful, but speedrunners love it. It's one of the most. It's broken to the point where it's a goldmine for speedrunning.
Okay. So, yeah, just give me Diddy Kong Racing and Jet Force Gemini and call it a day. That's all I want at this point. Let's round out the Roper Report with story number 6. Game developers aren't interested in NFTs and cryptocurrency. A report.
You know who else isn't interested in it? Me.
Tam. Say the word. What was it?
No, not for Tam. No not fucking Tam. Thanks.
No fucking thanks. Not for Tam. And Tam, you really are on this show whenever there's NFT news.
Bro, it's I'm wild. Here. Anytime there's NFT news, I appear.
We've been NFT free all week because it's Activision Blizzard situation. But like on the one day where there's finally a news story, here you are in front of me. So let's get into
it. My favorite revelation is the dude, one of the two dudes who created NFTs many, many years ago. The first iteration of NFTs came out in Rotten Arco and was like, this shit does not work and is a scam. Do not use it. And people are like, I don't know if we can trust that guy. It's like, he made it. He came up with this.
Let's hop into it with Ed Nightingale at Eurogamer. I think a lot of developers agree with you, Tam. Game developers aren't interested in NFTs and cryptocurrency, according to the latest GDC State of the Game Industry report. NFTs have already proven divisive in the industry, with many big studios leaning into the technology despite criticism from players. However, 70% of developers asked for the survey were not interested in NFTs. Meanwhile, 72% were not interested in cryptocurrency as a payment tool. Further, the vast majority of respondents criticized the new technology for its scam potential, environmental impact, and monetization concerns. Quote, I think it's a tech looking for a purpose. People will be interested in it as a gamble to make money, but there's not enough of a public demand for it to be an actual currency, said one respondent. Quote, we should collectively agree to ban the use of blockchain-based technologies in our industry because of their hugely negative environmental impact, said another. Another quipped, quote, I'd rather not endorse burning a rainforest down to confirm someone owns a JPEG, end quote. Tim, it sounds like you agree with these sentiments.
Yeah, so I, and this is specifically for gaming-related discussion, but like I feel like it's pertinent to point out there's an article on The Atlantic written by Anil Dash, which is NFTs weren't supposed to end like this. And Anil Dash is one of the two people who basically participated in what was effectively like a tech game jam. And his whole thing was he partnered with an artist, and between them they were like, how can we make it so artists can, on in a digital era, you know, earn money off their art and protect it? And NFT is what they came up with. And I'm going to quote from the article and say, read a quote from the article that speaks to NFTs as it currently is. And it is, the NFT prototype we created in one night hackathon had some shortcomings. You couldn't store the actual digital artwork on a blockchain because of technical limits. Records in most blockchains are too small to hold an entire image. Many people suggested that rather than trying to shoehorn the whole artwork into the blockchain, one could just include the web address of an image, or perhaps a mathematical compression of the work and use it to reference the artwork elsewhere. We took that shortcut because we were running out of time. 7 years later, all of today's popular NFT platforms still use this same shortcut. That means that when someone buys an NFT, they're not buying the actual digital artwork. They're buying a link to it. And worse, they're buying a link that in many cases lives on a website of a new startup that's likely to fail within a few years. Decades from now, how will anyone verify whether the linked artwork is the original? All common NFT platforms today share this same weakness. They still depend on one company staying business to verify your art. They depend on old-school fashioned pre-blockchain internet where artwork would suddenly vanish if someone forgot to renew a domain. Right now, NFTs are built on an absolute house of cards constructed by people selling them. That is all you need to know about NFTs currently. That shit does not work. It's a scam. It makes no sense. It is rich people trying to find new ways to kind of launder their cash, and artists are having their shit stolen. It's just like a clusterfuck. And I'm not surprised that developers are like, no, thank you. Again, we talked about this last time. There will be a good use of NFTs. At some point, we'll figure it out. Some developers will figure it out and understand, oh, this is how we can enhance what we have today with NFTs. We are not there yet right now, because the place is full of grifters, scammers, thieves, and opportunists. You are not going to get... You are surrounded by snake oil salesmen, and you are looking for a cure for your illness. It's not going to happen. You are just going to get snake oil right now.
Yeah. I mean, based off of that, right, the first respondent here that we had, that we read through, is the one that I vibe with the most, of them saying, I think it is a tech looking for a purpose. People will be interested in it as a gamble to make money, but there's not enough public demand for it to be an actual currency. Where NFTs are at right now, they just seem very messy. And I said this on in a previous episode in a conversation, saying that, like, I don't think the technology is inherently bad. The only thing I think is inherently bad is what it does to the environment. I think there could be promise for somebody to figure out how to work with them and how to make them something that is worthwhile. The thing is, none of the implementation I've seen pitched so far seems worthwhile. Mm. Everything regarding ownership of, like, game skins and everything else seems like either they understand how video game development works, or they're more focused on the idea and the concept of ownership as opposed to the actual, like, wait, no, how is this going to work when, like, you know, Activision isn't going to talk to Ubisoft so I can have the same skin in multiple games and actually have ownership of this thing. And also, is it fun? Like, is this a thing that I care about as a player? Like, is this going to make my game better? I've not really seen many, many pitches on, hey, this is going to make your game fun. This is going to make your game better. Most of what I see is more so the idea of, but you can own your skin. It's like, cool, but why? Why do I care? Why do I want to do this?
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about it more as the months go on.
Yeah, it is. And like, the funniest for me, like, I'm enjoying it, because as someone who is, like, absolutely confident that I can be detached from it because it's just a mess, I'm enjoying it. People, like, there's the Twitter thing where they're like, oh, we've got hexagonal NFT things, and within minutes, everyone had a hexagonal display picture, because people were just screenshotting them and then putting them onto their things. And like, artists and NFT owners were like, Twitter, why aren't you stopping this? And Twitter isn't stopping it, because it can't be stopped. It's a stupid concept, okay? And, like, there's a Twitter account which is like NFT bros getting dunked on, which I adore. And it's just like, I'm going through it. It's just L's being handed out left, right, and center for people on NFTs and blockchain stuff, and I love it. It's hilarious to me.
I call it an NFL, but it already exists. You know what I mean, Tam? You know what I mean? Tam, I can't wait for these NFT discussions to one day stop, but it seems like that's just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to mom and drop shops today, where would I look?
You would look at the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Ooh. Out today, we got Gravity Chase for Xbox One and PC, The Company Man for Switch, that's what they call me, but give us a $1 tier, Tim Gettys on the Patreon, Merex Market for Switch, Baby Storm for Switch, Go Minimal for Switch, Dungeons of Shalnor for Switch, Kinduo for Switch, and then Word Game for PC, and then also Strange Horticulture for PC. What's strange about it? You'll have to check out that game to find out. We got an NVIDIA GeForce update for you. Remember that we've partnered with NVIDIA to keep you updated on all the latest GeForce RTX editions to your favorite games, like Rainbow Six Extraction, which launches with NVIDIA DLSS and Reflex. Rainbow Six Extraction is, of course, out now. And your experience can be enhanced using NVIDIA DLSS and NVIDIA Reflex. From optimized performance to reduced latency, gameplay is faster, smoother, and more responsive. When NVIDIA DLSS is enabled, performance is boosted by up to 2x at 4K, allowing you to play Rainbow Six Extraction with maxed out graphics, higher frame rates, and uncompressed image quality. Enable NVIDIA Reflex to quickly and easily reduce system latency by up to 27% at 4K for GeForce GTX 10 series and newer GPUs, making gameplay play snappy and more responsive. We have one new date for you. What Lies in the Multiverse from Untold Tales comes to PC and console on March 4th. Of course, Remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can get the show ad-free. And you can also get in your reader mail. We had reader mail, but we're late in the show, so I'm going to save the reader mail for the post-show. So tune in for that, or tune in to that for some fun questions being asked. For now, I'm going to go over to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where you write in a list of what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so you can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. And it looks like people are writing in about to clarify what the costs are for our Patreon. I appreciate that. Let's see. Stunning, you're wrong. Sure, why not? Hero 5700 says, while the headlines are suggesting Raven QA has unionized, they have not held elections. Vote to unionize and will not be recognized as a union until they do so. And so there's that. And then Nano says, Shadow Man recently came out on PS4, Xbox One, and Switch on January 13th and 17th. Damn. In 2022? It came out like last week on modern consoles?
Hell yeah.
Whoa. Who would have thought?
Let's go. I'm not buying that. I want the N64 version only.
Nano also brings up the idea of digital game resale for like a good implementation of NFTs, which I have seen thrown around. It's always something I forget to bring because I've always wanted to bring that up on the show. That is a good idea. I think that is like the one good idea I've seen about for like NFT implementation. But it's also the thing of like I want to read into it more so I can actually speak about it in like in a way that I feel good about. But if that works, I do think that is a good idea. Yeah.
You want to hear another good idea?
What's that, Tam?
I've been thinking a lot about Sean Paul's song We Be Burning and changing the lyric legalize it to unionize it.
Ooh, that's good.
So, and turning it into a union anthem. Let's do this, blessing.
What happened to Sean Paul, man?
He's chilling. He retweeted a video that I did a few years ago, which was quite funny.
Did you do a remix of Temperature?
No, me and Lucy and I were doing a video and we did a sync clap and I said, we make a clap and she didn't follow up with it. Yeah.
He retweeted that video?
Oh yeah, he was like, awesome. It was incredible. It was amazing.
That is awesome. Sean Paul, make more music. We need you.
Yeah, awesome. Man.
Also Sean Kingston, you know, where you at?
Yeah, where you at?
Had a great run from like 2007 to 2010. And then went away. I think that's it for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Of course, it's Friday. Next week's hosts go like this. On Monday, it's me and Tim. Tuesday, it's Greg and Gary. Wednesday, it's me and Andy. Thursday, it's Greg and Tim. And on Friday, it's me and Tam. Let's go. We're back at it, like baby. A bad habit. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is Rainbow Six Extraction with Greg, Mike, and Andy. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember this. It's been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. You have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, so stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, tweet at Tim Geddes. Tell him we want that $1 here on Patreon. I'm going to get